Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the one and only Maxwell here to welcome you to Michael's Saturday Surprise for Saturday, December the 3rd, 2016. We are going to hear an hour and a half of Christmas-related material. In fact, it's the same program. We will hear three episodes of The Comic Weekly Men. They were aired 3 weeks in a row, one after another. And so it'll be like you're living in a comic book for 3 weeks. The Christmas Marathon is coming up on Saturday, December the 17th, and you need to get aboard and enjoy it if you would like to. So remember that 12 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. Eastern, you'll be hearing 12 hours of good old-time radio shows from different hosts. So come on, let's prepare by pretending we're there right now by hearing an hour and a half of The Comic Weekly Man. The first show is called Christmas in 1 Week. First comic, Snookums. And it was aired December the 17th, 1950. Enjoy.
I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man, and I'm here to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Yes, boys and girls, it's Comic Weekly time. And here I come right into your house to bring a little fun and happiness. Right out of the pages of Puck the Comic Weekly, straight into your living room, your friend, the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Little Miss Honey, how are you today?
Oh, I'm so excited, I can just hardly wait.
Excited about what?
Can't you guess?
Why, no. I have no idea at all.
Oh, my, you grown-ups. Christmas is coming in 1 week.
Oh, that's right. Jolly old St. Nicholas, little Jack Horner who pulled out a plum.
And jingle bells and presents and... Don't you just love it?
I certainly do. And I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful Christmas.
Oh, Christmas is wonderful always.
Yes, it is.
Just because it's Christmas.
That's so true.
Now, please read me the funnies.
Puck the Comic Weekly. Mm-hmm. Very well, I will in just a moment. But before I do, let's listen to this nice man. Now, here we go with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on top of the first page...
Oh, that sweet little Snookums.
Oh, so it is. And I'll read that right away.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Diddly-da, diddly-do, wick-a-mack-a-mookums. Let's have a little tune for little Snookums. Archie is downtown with Snookums. Archie turns his head, and a second later, Snookums is walking right out toward the street. And Archie screeches, Snookums, come here! How many times have I told you not to leave Papa's side? Archie takes Snookums' hand, and they walk along a little further. As they chat, Snookums pulls his hand away. When Archie looks down, he sees that Snookums has disappeared again. And last picture, top row, Archie sees him heading for the curb, and he screeches, Snookums, didn't I tell you not to leave my side? First picture, bottom row, they come to a toy store. And the sign in the window reads, Sale! Junior Cop Outfit! And that gives Archie a bright idea. And a second later, they're in the store, and Archie has bought the Junior Cop Outfit. The salesman asks, Shall I wrap it up, sir? And Archie replies, No, keep the box. I'll wear it. Last picture of the row, Archie and Snookums are walking down the street. Archie is wearing the policeman's star, carrying the club, and little Snookums is handcuffed to Archie.
Oh, wasn't that clever? He handcuffs little Snookums to him so that he can't get away.
Yes, that was a very bright idea, and much safer. Yes. Oh, I think it's fun playing cops that way.
Yes, but Snookums... Jacobs doesn't look as happy about that as I think he would.
Well, I guess he's more curious about the things that he can see in the street.
I'm afraid so.
Well, at any rate, now Snookums won't get run over by a car.
No, and you should always be careful not to go in the street, especially when you're a little boy or a little girl.
Oh, I'm glad you told that to all of your friends who are listening.
I hope they mind me.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Good. Oh, over the page quick to Flash Gordon, because Flash is on a strange planet, and the wizard, who doesn't like Flash, tried to get Flash killed dead, but Flash fooled him.
Yes, and now Flash is safe. But today, the wizard is going to make Dale go through her ordeal.
I think he's a cruel, mean thing. Please read and let's see what's going to be and how it turns out.
All right, very well. Here we go with Flash Gordon. Rig-a-rig-a-doon-doons, hash-kamatash. Let's have music for Heroic Flash. Flash has come safely through his ordeal, but Dale has still to face hers. Ignoring Flash's protests, Wizard Curzo sentences Dale to the ordeal of the Madfish. All Queen Suni can do is to let Flash say farewell to Dale. Armed only with a plastic dagger, Dale is forced to plunge into the ray-lighted pool where lurking perils await her. Huge fish with sharp teeth rush at Dale and snap at her. Last picture top row, frenzied by the ray light, the mad fish attacked Dale fiercely. She fights back as best she can. Flash groans, "Oh, it's not fair. She hasn't a chance." And then first picture bottom row, Flash snatches Suni's jewel dagger and dives to Dale's aid. Curzo moves to interfere, but Queen Suni warns that Flash isn't breaking any of his laws, that he never dreamed anyone would be devoted enough to risk sharing a victim's fate. Not even the vicious madfish can outfight Flash when he's defending Dale. And Dale does her full share, forgetting her own danger and her anxiety to keep harm from befalling Flash. And together they drive off the madfish. As Flash and Dale climb out of the pool, last picture, Queen Suni tells Curzo there's nothing more he can do to them, that they've survived their ordeals, and that she's now going to take Flash and Dale back to the palace. The wizard frowns and warns,
"It's your mistake, and you'll answer to me if these intruders from space break our laws against metal."
Does he mean that if Flash were to try to make a metal ship so that he can get off the planet, that he will try to kill him again?
Yes.
Well, that means that Flash will just have to stay there forever and ever.
It certainly looks that way, unless he could build a plastic ship of some kind.
Oh, I hope he can. I hope he can.
Well, we'll find out more about that next week.
Oh, look, underneath Flash Gordon, there's Roy Rogers way up there in the front.
Yes, you've been so eager to read him that I thought I'd move him up here.
Goody. Let's see what new adventure Roy starts today.
All right, here we go with Roy Rogers. Hi-yip-hi-yo. Now here we go with Roy and Trigger. Hi-yip-hi-yo. Roy gallops down the trail leading through the mountains on his way to an Indian reservation where he plans to sell some cattle. He sees a fort along the road. The fort has been deserted ever since the Indians made peace with the white men. As Roy nears it, suddenly he hears a shot, and a boy in a pony gallops out of the fort furiously. He hears the boy shout, last picture top row,
"Run, Clover, he's after us!"
First picture next row, there's another shot, and a man on a horse gallops out of the fort chasing the boy. And he shouts,
"Stop, you young scamp, I'll blast you out of the saddle."
In a second, Roy has his lariat out, tears after the man who's firing at the boy. He flips his lariat. And in a second, Roy has jerked the old man off the horse, last picture the row. The man snarls,
"What's the idea of roping me, you crazy cowpoke?"
Roy exclaims, "The kid's horse stumbled. You'll be hurt." So he gallops after the boy, first picture bottom row. The boy jumps to his feet and runs to the cliff. Roy calls,
Hey, don't run. I'm your friend."
The boy cries,
"Hey, leave me alone."
And then suddenly leaps over the cliff into the river below. The boy jumps off Trigger and runs to the edge of the cliff to look after the boy. At this moment, the man who was chasing the boy has worked himself loose of the rope and has picked up a rifle and is sneaking up behind Roy. Roy says to himself, last picture, "He can't fight those rapids. He'll drown.
Here, grab something and hang on, sonny. I'm coming."
Oh, is Roy going going to jump into the river after the boy?
I'm afraid he is, because the water is extremely fast right there, and he thinks it's too much for the boy.
Well, this is terribly dangerous, because if Roy jumps into the water, he might be drowned. And but still, if he doesn't, well, that mean man with the beard and the coonskin cap just might shoot him.
Yes, say, this is certainly an exciting beginning to this new adventure, isn't it?
Oh, I should say so.
And maybe next week Roy will work his way out of danger.
I hope so. Now, cross the page, please, to Dick's Adventures. Such wonderful things are happening in Dick's Adventures because Dick is in the early days of America when this country was just beginning.
Yes, when it was struggling to gain its freedom from England. And Dick has been dreaming that he's with George Washington. So now let's see what adventure he has today. Here we go with Dick's Adventures. And say the magic words with me.
Riggity pack a zack a zick.
Let's have music for Adventurous Dick. In his dream, Dick finds himself back in 1776, marching with the 1st American Militia under General Washington. The road leads out of Boston south toward New York, now threatened with capture by the King's Redcoats. It's a hot, dusty midsummer day. Last picture, top row, the men stop for a little rest. As Dick stretches out on the ground, his comrade says,
"Eh, fine armor we got. Not enough guns, not enough bullets. Shucks, we ain't even told the kind we're free and independent."
Dick murmurs drowsily,
"Oh, today's the 4th of July. Independence Day. Yeah, I thought Thomas Jefferson in Philadelphia."
And Dick falls off asleep. He dreams that he's walking down the streets of Philadelphia. First picture, next row, a man there selling newspapers says,
"Newspaper, sir? The Philadelphia Gazette. Full account of the rebellion against the British."
Dick exclaims,
"Hey, gosh, I must be in Philadelphia. Well, thanks. I'll take a paper."
The man goes on,
"Best newspaper in the colonies, Corporal. The editor is one of the finest writers, finest statesmen, finest scientists in the world. One of the greatest American patriots."
Dick exclaims,
"Benjamin Franklin. But I don't see anything about the Declaration of Independence. And shouldn't the Liberty Bell be ringing?"
Puzzled, the old man shakes his head. Dick sees two men passing by across the street. Last picture of the row, as Dick watches, the two men walk rapidly into the printing shop. The old man exclaims,
"Oh, it's Thomas Jefferson and John Adams. They've been with Mr. Franklin for days."
Dick sees a sign atop the store. It reads, "Philadelphia Gazette, Benjamin Franklin." First picture, bottom row. A few minutes later, the door of the printing shop abruptly opens, and an elderly man peers out over his spectacles. Spying Dick, he calls,
"Oh, come here, please."
The man selling newspapers says,
"Oh, it's Mr. Franklin."
Last picture, Dick exclaims softly,
"Well, I wonder what he wants with me. Oh, coming, sir."
Oh, Benjamin Franklin. And he wants Dick, and now Dick's going into his place.
Yes.
Isn't it wonderful? Dick is meeting all these famous Americans.
Isn't this something, though?
Yes, and I know something else Benjamin Franklin did. He invented the lightning rod.
Yes.
He invented with the kite.
Say, you remember well.
Yes, I do, do I?
Uh-huh. And now?
Oh, look, underneath Dick's Adventures, Rusty Riley.
And I'll read that in just a moment. But first, here's that man again with something interesting to say. Now, here we go again with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the bottom of page 3 of the first section with Rusty Riley.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Gallop and run till the road is dusty. Give us music for his horse and Rusty. Rusty and Patty had taken the boat out in the inlet to test it. The motor died, and there, out on the open water, the two were marooned. Darkness fell, and a little later, the smugglers came toward them and dropped anchor within speaking distance. Rusty and Patty overheard the smugglers at their crooked business. Then, a little later, Mr. Kilgore, the government treasury agent, a man whose work is much like a detective, came in the Coast Guard cruiser. The Coast Guardman went aboard the smugglers' boat and searched it.
As Mr. Kilgore gets back into the Coast Guard cruiser, one of the smugglers says,
"Well, Mr. T-Man, are you satisfied we ain't breaking no laws?"
Mr. Kilgore replies, "Yes, you seem to be clean. Sorry we had to bother you, but you know how it is." And the Coast Guard cruiser pulls away. As the boat pulls away, one of the smugglers says to his pals,
"Now, you should have chucked that black light gadget over the side. We'd have had plenty of trouble trying to explain it."
"Oh, he didn't see it. I had it stowed under a coil of rope in the chain locker."
At this moment, last picture top row, on the Coast Guard cruiser, one of the men says to Mr. Kilgore,
"Well, excuse me, Mr. Kilgore. We just got a radio flash from the station. A couple of kids are supposed to be out here in the inlet in a motorboat lost."
Mr. Kilgore says, "Well, okay. We'll play the searchlight around. We should be able to pick them up." And in a second, the searchlight picks out Rusty's boat. They head for it as Rusty throws up his hands, first picture bottom row, calling,
"Hey, help, over here!"
The Coast Guard cruiser pulls up beside Rusty's boat. Mr. Kilgore exclaims,
"Well, by George, it's the youngsters from the Miles place."
And a moment later, Rusty and Patty are in the Coast Guard cruiser on their way back to shore. As they head back, Rusty tells Mr. Kilgore,
"Yeah, we ran out of gas. We were just going to yell to that other boat when we heard them talking about Captain Kloon's lobster pots."
Patty tells him she thought that they were going to rob the lobster pots. Mr. Kilgore says thoughtfully,
"Say, maybe they are. Well, we'll keep an eye on them."
Later that night, as Rusty's getting ready for bed, he's talking to Tex. Suddenly, he says to Tex,
"Hey, Tex, what the dickens is a black light?"
Tex replies thoughtfully,
"Black light? By jingo, I was just reading something about that in the Science magazine. I can't just recollect, Rusty, but I'll give you the article. You can read it."
Maybe next week we'll find out all about what that black light is.
Yes, maybe we will.
And maybe we'll find that it's a clue that'll help Rusty catch the smugglers, and then he will be a hero.
Yeah, maybe so.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so.
Good. Now...
Oh, now is the time for my funny, funny friend, Dagwood.
It is indeed. So let's pick up the first page of the second section of Puck the Comic Weekly, and here we go with Dagwood and Blondie. Ramafoo, ramafum, zim, zam, zombie. Conjure me music for Dagwood and Blondie. Mr. Dithers is talking to his friend Donald, a very timid-looking man. Mr. Dithers is saying to Donald,
"Ah, Donald, you should get married. You're missing so much."
And at the thought of getting married, Donald's eyes pop open. Mr. Dithers takes him by the arm and says,
Let me take you over to the Bumsteads and show you a happy man."
And even though Donald holds back, Mr. Dithers drags him over to the Bumsteads' door. Last picture top row, as they stand on the Bumstead's doorstep, Mr. Dithers says,
"Here's his home. His own little castle. And he's treated like a king in there."
Donald looks very nervous. Mr. Dithers rings the doorbell. First picture next row, it's opened by Blondie. And Mr. Dithers points to Blondie, saying,
And look at the beautiful little wife he has to greet him after a hard day's work."
Mr. Dithers takes Donald to the kitchen. He looks in the oven and says,
"Yeah, look at the delicious dinner she has cooked for him. Smell that apple pie for his dessert."
Donald licks his lips hungrily. Last picture of the row, Mr. Dithers points out Alexander, Cookie, and the dogs quietly enjoying themselves, and he says,
"And little children and pets to bring joy and comfort. Beautiful, isn't it?"
And Donald holds his hat reverently in this one moment of peace and quiet, which is the children's hour. First picture next row, Mr. Dithers shows him through the living room, and he says,
"And look, isn't this cute? Little flowers and doilies all around to give the homey feeling. That's the woman's touch."
Then Mr. Dithers takes Donald upstairs and shows him Dagwood's bedroom and bureau and says,
Yeah, look, everything is done for him. See how carefully she places his shirts and handkerchiefs in his bureau?
Donald's face lights up happily as he asks,
"You mean he doesn't even have to rub out his own socks?"
Next picture, Mr. Dithers points out Dagwood, who is smoking his pipe in a comfortable chair, reading a paper, and he says,
"And there you see the contented husband with his pipe and slippers. A happy man."
And Donald says,
"If that settles it, I'm going to get married."
First picture, bottom row, Donald says to himself thoughtfully,
"Now let's see, who shall I propose to? Rosemary? Victoria? Avira? Marie?"
And Dagwood happens to see Mr. Dithers, and he jumps out of his chair saying,
"Oh, Mr. Dithers, may I speak to you a minute? May I borrow 50 cents until payday?"
And Donald's eyes pop open in amazement, and Mr. Dithers goes... And last picture, Donald is tearing down the street with Mr. Dithers after him trying to catch him, and Dithers says,
Now, money isn't everything, Donald."
And Donald yells,
"Yeah, I know, but it's nice stuff to have in your pockets."
"Isn't that funny? That silly man. He decides to get married until he found out that Dagwood didn't have any money."
Yes. Well, being married is expensive, and a man has to work very hard to pay for his house and a car and buy clothes for his wife and feed his children and buy clothes for the children.
And food for the dogs.
Yes, yes. But even so, all the money in the world couldn't take the place of a lovely family and a lovely home.
Yes, because the home is so romantic.
Mm-hmm. Well, now...
Oh, look, right here under Blondie is Donald Duck, all good for a chuckle.
And I know you want to read that, so yes. Here we go with Donald Duck. Say the magic words with me. Squeedgem, squeedgem, squiddly chicka-chack. Let's have music to fit a quack-quack. Donald's girlfriend, Daisy, has asked Donald to come over to help her rearrange her furniture. Donald comes in the door, second picture, saying,
"Hi, Toots. Let's get started."
So he rolls up his sleeves. And Daisy tells him,
"Well, first, I want the Davenport over there."
Donald flexes his muscles, glares at the sofa, and gives it a push, and it sails across the room. And one... two, three. Donald has moved all of the furniture around. He surveys the room proudly, last picture of the row, saying,
"I'm a fast worker, Toots."
And Daisy points to a big, squatty chair, saying,
"Well, now, I'd like that chair moved into the next room."
So Donald flexes his muscles, glares at the chair, and starts pushing it toward the door. And Daisy asks, first picture, bottom row,
"Hadn't you better tip it sideways?"
And Donald exclaims,
"Nah, it'll go through easy."
And he gives it a shove through the door. And the chair is stuck in the door. Donald pushes and pushes. But the chair won't move. And Donald exclaims,
"Seems to be a tight squeeze."
So he goes around to the other room and tries to push it back. But the chair won't move. Donald exclaims,
Wow. Sort of seems slightly stuck."
Daisy says,
"Well, I can't wait any longer. I have shopping to do."
As she goes out the door, she tells him,
"And don't you dare go away and leave that blocking my doorway."
And Donald replies cheerfully,
"Don't worry, Toots. Your door won't be blocked when you get back."
Later in the afternoon, Daisy returns home after doing her shopping. She walks into her living room, and last picture sees the chair still stuck in the doorway. But a ladder has been set up over it, so she can climb up over the ladder on one side and down into the other room on the other side. And as Daisy stares at it, she feels just like this.
Wasn't that clever? Donald gets the chair stuck in the door, and then when he can't get it out, he builds a ladder so that she has to go from one room to another on the ladder. I think that's the funniest thing.
Yes, that Donald has some funny ideas.
Yes, he certainly has.
Well, now shall we see what Prince Valiant is doing?
Oh, yes, because he came to a strange castle, and he asked if he could stay there overnight. And then the next morning when he got up, the castle was being attacked, and now Prince Valiant has to stay there, and there's going to be a big battle.
So here we go, over to the last page, to Prince Valiant and the days of King Arthur. Hackett, Brackett, Gray Malkin, and Quince, music romantic for a fair, fair prince. Prince Valiant, Eagle, Rufus, and Arf enjoy a night's lodging, but their awakening is rude. Before they can leave, the castle is attacked. Their host, the king of the castle, Refook, comes to Val, buckling on his helmet, and he tells him,
"Your loss is my gain, for this is a fight to the finish, and every fighting man is welcome."
Last picture, top row, he points to the enemy outside the castle, and Val sees in the distance the leader of the enemy, a tall, fierce-looking man, and Ree says,
"Yonder stands my enemy, Black Robert, a brave and ruthless captain. Only one of us can survive this battle."
First picture, next row, Val and his friends tour the castle to become familiar with its defenses. There is none of the confusion that usually attends preparations for an attack, where these two unyielding enemies have planned each other's downfall for many years. Val watches as baskets of arrows are set up behind the parapets and workmen prepare the huge catapult. Every precaution is taken to defend the castle. Last picture of the row, we see the army outside the castle. They're preparing for the attack. Foot soldiers surround the castle, and later in the day, the war engines, ram, ballista, mangonel, and catapult thunder into action against the main gate. For 2 days, the stout, iron-studded gates withstand the terrible battering, and then they splinter and fall. But in the meantime, Sir Ree has sealed up the arch with masonry, and first picture bottom row, the attackers find themselves face to face with a blank wall of stone. Black Robert hurls one assault after another, probing, searching for a weak spot in the defenses. He sends his men against the castle with scaling ladders. But as they climb up the ladders, seeking to go into the castle, the ladders are pushed from the walls and his men are thrown back. Last picture, Val's friend, Refook, says, as he notices his enemy still trying and trying to break through,
"Our enemies show unexpected strength. A messenger must get through to ask my brothers for help."
And carry the message?
I wouldn't be surprised if either Val or one of his friends did.
That would be exciting.
Yes, but dangerous, too.
I can hardly wait to see what happens.
Oh, this is going to be a very busy week of waiting for you. Christmas and next week's comics.
Yes, and I'll see you next week, and then it will be Christmas. And then, too, we'll see what happens in the funnies.
Yes, we certainly will. And I hope that you and every other boy and girl has the most wonderful Christmas they ever had.
Yes, and I hope so, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that's all the time I have. But before I go, here's that fellow with some more interesting information. Well, honey, and all you boys and girls, I've got to go now.
All right, Mr. Comic Weekly Man, but I'll be waiting for you next week.
Okay, that's a date, and a date with all you boys and girls. Be sure to meet me with our little friend, Miss Honey, next week when I read Puck the Comic Weekly. For I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. I'll be back to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Don't forget, boys and girls, see you all next week. Your friend, the Comic Weekly Man. The Jolly Comic Weekly Man.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. That was the Comic Weekly Man, and a week before Christmas. First comic, Snookums. It was aired on December the 17th, 1950. Let's hear where our second Comic Weekly show aired a week later, on December the 24th, 1950. It's entitled, Wishing You a Merry Christmas. First comic, Flash Gordon. So let's sit back and enjoy the show.
I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man, and I'm here to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Yes, boys and girls, it's Comic Weekly time, and here I come right into your house to bring a little fun and happiness right out of the pages of Puck the Comic Weekly straight into your living room, your friend the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man.
Hello, hello, hello.
Well,
little Miss Honey, how are you today?
Well, you should know.
You bet yes. I do. You're happy as a jingle bell.
I certainly am, because it's Christmas week.
So it is. So let's wish everybody a merry, merry Christmas.
Yes, let's.
A merry, merry Christmas, everyone. And I hope everyone gets exactly the presents they wish to get, because if they do, it means that everyone in the world is thoughtful, and the world needs thoughtfulness to make happiness.
That's so true.
Yes.
And now, the funnies, please.
Puck the Comic Weekly.
Yes.
Very well, I'll read that in just a moment. But first, let's listen to this nice man. And now here we go with Puck the Comic Weekly.
Oh, please read me Flash Gordon because it's so interesting. Flash and Dale are on a strange planet.
A planet where no one is permitted to use metal in any form.
No rockets, no guns, no watches, no nothing.
That's right, because the wizard Kurzu, a rather mean man, has outlawed metal. And the wizard and another mean man named Goro don't like Flash and Dale.
But the queen, Suni, is very nice to them.
Yes, so let's see today whether Flash has any more trouble with the wizard or with Goro. So here we go on the second page of Puck the Comic Weekly with Flash Gordon.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Riga-riga-doon-doon, saskamatash. Let's have music for heroic Flash. Flash and Dale and Queen Suni come out of the wizard's cave to return to Suni's palace. Goro, the queen's general, who doesn't like Flash, looks quite surprised to see Flash and Dale still alive. Queen Suni remarks that he didn't expect them to survive their ordeals, huh? Goro frowns and says,
I still think they'll bring you disaster.
They all head for the palace. Flash asks Queen Suni, well, if the ray dissolves all metal, how can we live without calcium for our bones? Queen Suni tells him that many people died before the wizards had reduced the ray and made it very weak. So now it doesn't hurt them or cause landslides because it only works beneath the surface of the earth and mining is forbidden. She tells Flash that the wizards hate progress and civilization, and that Kurzu said he would end poverty and war by destroying metal from which cannon and bullets are made. But still her people have to work all day and night just to eat. They still fight with arrows and sharp sticks while savage beasts roam the land. At this moment, last picture of the row, a huge, vicious animal waits behind a rock, ready to leap upon the people approaching. First picture, bottom row. As they come near it, it roars. Goro shouts,
On guard, your majesty, a fanged dragon!
Bravely, he turns his panicky mount toward the monster. But Goro's lance is no match for the dragon. And Flash leaps from his terrified mount, shouting, Ride for your lives! But the fear-crazed steeds break loose, throwing Sunny and Dale. Flash, without any weapons, dashes at the monster who has now thrown Goro and is pinning him to the ground with his powerful claws as he bares his fangs at Flash.
Oh, just see what that old wizard did. If Flash had a ray pistol, he could shoot that dragon and save everyone.
Well, next week we'll find out if Flash figures out some way to defeat the dragon.
Oh, I hope he will.
Yes. Well, now...
Oh, now, please, across the page to Dick's adventures. Dick is in the early days of America.
And he's dreaming that he's in Philadelphia on the 4th of July.
Yes, and that he met Benjamin Franklin, who was a wonderful man in the early days of America. He flew a kite and invented electricity.
Yes, and many other things. So now let's read and see what happens today in Dick's Adventures. Say the magic words with me.
Riggity pack, kazak, kazik.
Let's have music for Adventurous Dick.
Dick
Jake is dreaming his wonderful dream. It's July 4th, 1776, Independence Day, and in Philadelphia. Dick wonders,
but why is nobody celebrating?
Then from the doorway of a small print shop, Dick hears his name called. He recognizes Benjamin Franklin. Dick goes to Franklin's shop. Mr. Franklin says,
I see you are attached to General Washington's militia, Corporal. Please deliver this to the general. It has just been approved.
Glance at it.
Dick takes the document, which is a piece of paper, unrolls it, looks at it last picture top row, and starts to read.
What in the course of human events...
Oh, gosh! It's a Declaration of Independence!
A few minutes later, mounted on a horse, first picture next row, Dick rides through wildly cheering crowds. Here is the first glorious Fourth. High over the shouting, a great bell is thundering the momentous news of American freedom. Dick cries,
the Liberty Bell!
And he continues on his way to carry the Declaration of Independence. George Washington's in New York, readying his men for a defense of the city. The ride from Philadelphia is long, and late that night, Dick stops at an inn. He finds, last picture of the row, that the inn is a nest for Tories, men bitterly opposed to American independence. The waitress warns that he be careful, because the Tories would slit his throat if they think that he's carrying military information. Dick replies cheerfully,
I am, but they can read it.
And then, first picture, bottom row, Dick goes to the fireplace, holds up the paper, and says to the Tories,
the information in this paper is going to make our soldiers fight like wildcats.
And then he reads it to them in a voice ringing with defiance.
When in the course of human events...
Next morning, last picture, Dick's on his way an hour before dawn, continuing his journey to Washington's headquarters in New York. As he thinks about the night before, when he read the Declaration of Independence to the Tories, who were people in America, on England's side, and how much they didn't like it, Dick laughs and says to himself,
they didn't appreciate it much.
The Declaration of Independence. That was when the Americans wrote down on the paper that they wanted to be free from England.
That's right. That was one of the most famous documents of the history of the world, because it was the first time a group of men stated that everybody in the world should have a free government, a government that would be a good government to everybody.
And just think, it happened right here in America.
Yes.
Oh, look, underneath Dick's adventures, here's Rusty Riley.
Oh, yes, and this is really becoming something interesting, too, because Rusty, who was trying out a boat, got marined out in the harbor.
And then he saw the smugglers come, and they were doing something with a black light.
Yes, and then the Coast Guard cruiser came along and searched the smugglers, but they didn't find anything.
And then they saw Rusty and Patty, and they rescued them and brought them home again. But I'm still wondering about that black light. What is a black light?
Well, Tex gave Rusty a magazine that had an article about a black light in it. So let's see what we can find out right now. Here we go with Rusty Riley. Gallop and run till the road is dusty. Give us music for his horse and Rusty. Patty, Rusty's friend, daughter of Mr. Miles, sees that Rusty's reading a magazine, and she asks,
what are you reading in that science magazine, Rusty?
Oh, it's an article Tex gave me to read. It's all about black light.
Huh? Black light?
Sure, don't you remember? We heard one of those men on that strange boat say something about black light. Well, this article tells all about it. Must be a queer sort of a thing, because it says here that it's invisible unless it shines in a certain kind of chemical, and then it makes that chemical glow real bright.
Jeepers, that sounds spooky. But what could those men on the boat use it for?
Well, then Rusty puts on his jacket, last picture top row, saying, well, let's go down to the boathouse and ask Mr. Tony, our teacher. He knows about all kinds of things.
All right, Rusty, let's go.
First picture next row. Down by the waterfront, they go into the boathouse where Tony had been painting lobster pot markers, which are huge corks floating above the water, marking the spots where the lobster pots are at the bottom of the ocean. And Patty says,
golly, Mr. Tony isn't here. I thought he'd be painting some of those lobster pot markers.
Well, his paints and his brushes are all here.
Hey, let's paint a name on her skiff while we're here, huh?
So Rusty picks up a can of the paint and a brush, and they walk out to the boat. And Rusty paints the name Polly on his boat. Rusty says...
It says Misto Tint in this can. Well, anyway, it's a nice bright red. There, how's that look, huh?
Fine, Rusty. But it's time for supper. We can come down and put the name on the other side tonight.
After supper that night, Rusty goes down to the boat to paint the name on the other side. He calls to Patty, who's still in the boathouse.
Hey, golly, it's pretty dark for painting outside here, Patty. We need a light.
And Patty calls back.
Oh, wait a second. Here's something that looks like a kind of a spotlight. It's got a long cord. I'll bring it out.
So Patty comes out carrying the thing that looks like a spotlight. She clicks the switch and says, last picture.
It must be broken or burnt out, Rusty. I switched it on, but it doesn't light.
Suddenly, Rusty sees the name Polly, which he'd painted on the boat earlier in the afternoon, is shining as though it were put on in electric lights. And he exclaims,
burn out nothing. Look at the name we painted on the skiff. It's black light.
Oh, so that's what the black light is. It doesn't show any light like a real light.
No, it's invisible unless it shines in a certain kind of chemical, like Rusty read in the magazine.
And when that invisible light is aimed at the then it makes it real bright.
Yes, and the paint that Rusty put on the boat had the chemical in it, and that's why the name is Bright.
Isn't it mysterious?
Yes. Well, now...
Now will you read Donald Duck for me?
I will right away if you'll turn over the page.
And there he is in the middle of page 5.
So here we go with Donald Duck. Say the magic words for the music with me. Squeegem, squeegem, squiddly chicka-chack. Let's have music to fit a quack, quack. Donald looks out the window, and he sees something that makes him angry. And he yells to his nephews.
Boys, come here.
And in a second, his three nephews are in the room. And Donald points out the window to the walk, which is covered with snow, and he barks.
I thought you boys promised to keep the walk shovel this winter.
And his nephews say cheerfully,
Sure, Uncle Donald. We get started tomorrow.
And Donald says angrily,
Tomorrow. That's what you said yesterday.
And his nephews go back to play. Donald begins to think. He thinks and thinks. And then he has a bright idea. And last picture, top row, he's made a phone call and is just finishing his conversation, saying,
And send him out right away, immediately.
First picture, bottom row, some delivery men are bringing three boxes, in a truck to Donald's house. And one of them says to Donald,
Well, here they are, Mr. Duck.
Donald replies,
Bring them right in.
And the men bring the boxes into the kitchen floor. Donald starts to open the boxes. His three nephews come running into the kitchen, and Donald says,
Look, boy, I need a little surprise.
And 2 seconds later, the front door pops open. And out the door dash Huey, Dewey, and Louie, all carrying shovels, and they shovel the snow off the sidewalk as fast as they can. Last picture, his nephews are riding their bicycles on the sidewalk, which is now shovel clean, while Donald sits in the house reading a book with a sly smile on his face.
Got the bicycles, they just had to shovel the snow off so they could ride the bicycles. I would do that, too.
Well, I should think you'd shovel the sidewalk so your mother wouldn't get her overshoes filled.
Yes, but it's hard for children to remember these things sometimes.
Yes, I suppose, but they should try.
Yes, they should try, especially at Christmas, because sometimes you get bigger presents.
Oh, you.
It's true.
Well, what should we read now?
Oh, since you read my friend Donald Duck, will you read my other friend, Uncle Remus? I just love Bear Rabbit so.
I certainly will if you'll turn over the page.
Oh, goody. Here he is, under Tilly the Toilet.
And I'll read that in just a moment. But first, here's that nice man again with something interesting to say. Now, here we go again with Puck the Comic Weekly. And on the bottom of the sixth page of the first section of Puck the Comic Weekly is Uncle Remus and his Tales of Br'er Rabbit.
Magic words for the music, please.
And say them with me.
Hippity-hoppity, make it a habit to give us music for old Brer Rabbit.
Uncle Remus says,
most times when Brer Rabbit gets lazy in the bones, he gets mighty super in the head.
Yes, and this is one of the days when Brer Rabbit needs to get super in the head, for his lawn is completely overrun with tall, tall grass, and it needs a cutting. Just then, Brer Bear and Brer Buzzard come by, and Brer Buzzard stops and says,
I think you was finally getting round to cutting your grass.
And Brer Rabbit replies cheerfully,
oh, I ain't cutting grass. I's looking for something. I's got a hole in my pocket, and I done lost $11 gold piece.
Last picture, top row. Brer Bear asks,
Is you given any reward for the finding?
And Brer Rabbit cheerfully says,
yeah, I split half with the man what finds it.
And by the time you can go, Brer Bear and Brer Buzzard have dashed home for their sights and are cutting Brer Rabbit's grass. First picture, bottom row. Finally, the grass is all cut. But no one has found the $11 gold piece. And Brer Bear, looking very disappointed, says,
is you sure you lost it in this field?
And Brer Buzzard moans,
Us is almost skunt the place clean.
And Brer Rabbit reaches in his back pocket and says cheerfully,
oh, hey, fellas, wait a minute. Well, what do you know about that? I found it in my hip pocket.
And when the others see it, they all go, and Brer Bear exclaims,
not work for nothing.
And Brer Buzzard growls,
I is this busted.
And last picture, they all walk down the road. Brer Bear says,
Something ain't right about this.
And Brer Buzzard exclaims,
in his pocket all the time. Nah.
And Brer Rabbit flips the coin, happily saying,
well, that's one way of getting the grass cut.
And Uncle Remus says,
sharp mind is just as sharp blade.
Oh, that smart little Brer Rabbit. He fooled Brer Bear and Brer Buzzard again.
Yes, he certainly did. Well, now shall we have some rootin' tootin' excitement?
Oh, yes, if it's Roy Rogers.
It certainly is.
Oh, I'm anxious to read that because Roy passed by an old Indian fort and he saw an old man wearing a coonskin cap shooting at a boy.
And Roy whipped out his lariat, pulled the old man off his horse and saved the boy from being shot.
Yes, but just then the boy jumped into the river.
And as Roy ran to help the boy, the old man got loose, grabbed up a gun.
Oh, hurry up and read, will you?
Very well, then. Go to the last page of the first section of the Comic Weekly, and here we go with Roy Rogers, King of the Cowboys. Hi-yip-hi-yo. Now here we go with Roy and Trigger. Hi-yip-hi-yo. As Roy prepares to dive into Rapid River to save the boy from the treacherous water, the evil old man pulls up his gun, aims at Roy, and growls,
I'll learn that cowpoke to mind his own business.
Pulls the trigger, last picture, top row, just as Roy dives into the river. First picture, next row. He misses Roy, who comes up beside the boy. Roy sees the log being carried straight at him by the swift current, and he calls, watch out, that log! The boy exclaims,
hey, you trying to drown me?
Last picture of the row, Roy grabs the boy and says, here, I've got you, sonny. We'll make it okay. First picture, bottom row, they grab the log as it comes by them, and they hang on to it. Roy says,
hey, that Jasper above is still shooting at us. Stay behind the log until we get ashore.
The boy replies,
he chased me out of old Fort Havoc, but he won't get away with it.
Up on the top of the ledge, overhanging the river, the old-timer takes another shot at Roy. And he growls,
I don't know how much the kid found out at the fort, but I ain't taking no chances on him. Or that nosy cowpoke, neither.
He shoots again. And just at this moment, a man gallops up on a horse. He jumps off and grabs the old-timer, last picture, exclaiming, drop that gun, you trigger-happy maverick!
Oh, goody, goody. Roy and the boy won't be shot now. That man saved them.
He certainly did.
I wonder who he is.
Well, next week, we'll find that out. But now,
naturally, the next time. comic to read is Dagwood and Blondie, and here they are on the first page of the second section of Puck the Comic Weekly.
So, naturally, here we go with Dagwood and Blondie. Ramafoo, Ramafum, Zim Zam Zombie, conjure me music for Dagwood and Blondie. As Dagwood gets home that evening, he tells Blondie,
I missed my bus. I was late for work again this morning.
Blondie tells him he's apt to lose his job. Now, that gives Dagwood something to think about during dinner. That evening, Dagwood, who's been sitting in a chair while Blondie's been reading the paper, suddenly jumps up. And he exclaims,
I just worked out a new shortcut to the bus that'll save me 2 minutes in the morning.
And last picture top row, Dagwood is ringing a neighbor's doorbell. He says to Daisy, his dog, who's with him,
I'm sure the neighbors will help me with this. They're all such nice people, and I've known them for so long.
First picture next row, Dagwood is pointing to the neighbor's fence, and he says to his neighbor,
Mr. Squirp, if you would remove these boards from your fence, I could cut through your yard.
And the neighbor replies cheerfully, I'll do that for you, Dagwood. And that's the first step in Dagwood's plan. Then Dagwood goes to another neighbor, and he's pointing to the hedge that's at the edge of their lawn, and is saying,
Now, if you folks would cut your hedge enough for me to leap over.
Last picture of the row, some other neighbors are carrying rocks from one end of their lawn to the other end. The missus is saying,
We're moving our rock garden so it won't be in Dagwood's way.
And another neighbor calls back as she winds up her clothesline.
Yes, and I'm taking down my clothesline so he won't strangle himself when he comes through here.
Next morning, Blondie calls Dagwood, telling him it's time to get up. Dagwood pops out of bed, saying,
I can't wait till I see how my new shortcut's going to work.
And after breakfast, he tears out of the house. Dashes through the hole in the neighbor's fence, saying,
Oh, boy, this is wonderful. The neighbors are all cooperating.
Last picture of the row, he leaps the other neighbor's hedge, saying,
How sweet are the wrangles to cut a hole in their hedge for me. Such nice people.
First picture bottom row, he dashes through the other neighbor's lawn where the rock garden's been removed, saying,
I feel as free as an antelope on the prairies. Nothing to obstruct me.
And then down he goes under the sidewalk at the corner and says,
Here I am at the bus stop with 30 seconds to spare. I'll never be late for work again.
And he stops, last picture, in front of a sign which is put up at the bus stop. The sign reads,
Notice, starting today, this bus line has been rerouted to Swithin Street, 2 blocks north.
And Dagwood feels just like this.
Poor Dagwood. After all the cooperation he had from his neighbors and all of his good plans, he's going to be late for work today because the bus doesn't stop at that corner today.
Yes, poor Dagwood has the kind of luck so many of us have. When he tries to make something work out one way, just the opposite happens.
I'm afraid so.
So. Well, now it's time for Prince Valiant.
Oh, that's easy to find, too. It's on the last page of the second section.
So here we go over to the last page.
And this is really exciting, because Prince Valiant and his friends had stayed overnight at a castle, and the next morning, when they were going to leave, the castle was attacked, and they couldn't get out.
And for days, the attackers had tried to break into the castle to capture it. But so far, they've been unsuccessful.
And then the king of the castle said that they would have to have a messenger to go for more help. I'm just wondering whether Prince Val's going to try to do this dangerous thing.
And it is dangerous, because the messenger will have to try to slip through the enemy's camp. So let's read now and find out who's going to be the messenger. Here we go with Prince Valiant. Eckert, Breckert, Grey Malkin, and Quince. Music romantic for a fair, fair prince. From high in the keep, Prince Valiant searches for a way by which a messenger can escape. But they're completely surrounded, and when the fighting wanes at sunset, sentries mount guard, completely surrounding the castle moat. As Val looks out at the moat, which is a sort of a river of water around the castle, he thinks that a swimmer might cross it. But even here, the sentries stand almost shoulder to shoulder. And then Val grins, and then laughs aloud, and he calls for some very unwarlike materials. Last picture top row, Val ties a long rope to a grapple, which is a stick with 4 curved hooks tied to its tip. Then men bring empty wine jugs and begin to tie them to long bars. Then a pulley and a rope are tied to the end of the grapple, and first picture next row, the grapple with pulley and line attached is shot across the moat amid a shower of arrows. As the arrows fired by Val's companions spin toward the enemy across the moat, the enemy sentries cower behind their shields. They don't see the grapple with a rope and pulley attached as it lands on the shore and digs into the ground. The rope attached falls in the water and sinks underneath unseen. That night, a water gate, which opens onto the moat from the castle where Val and his friends are, is opened, and men, carrying the 50 empty wine jugs, slip out into the water, tie the wine jugs to the rope attached to the grapple, which is stuck in the earth across the moat on the enemy side. Then slowly, the bobbing jugs are pulled by means of the pulley across the dark water toward the enemy sentries. A few minutes later, the moon breaks through the clouds. An enemy sentry, seeing the wine jugs bobbing in the water, thinks it's a head of soldiers wearing helmets, and he yells,
"Swimmers approaching! Help! An attack!"
The enemy sentries all rush to the danger spot, and at that moment, a messenger who's been swimming quietly in the water at a place far from the wine jugs finds ample room to slip out of the water and speed on his way unnoticed. Everyone laughs at Val's trick, but in the morning, there's no joy, for they see, last picture, that the most feared device in warfare is growing steadily beneath the walls.
What is the most feared thing?
That's something we'll find out next week.
All right, I'll wait, but wasn't that a wonderful scheme of Val's? To make the sentries think that a lot of men were coming in one place so that the enemy all gathered there and then they didn't really see the messenger.
That was a brilliant idea.
Yes, it was. I just love Prince Valiant because he's a hero and so bright.
He certainly is. Now, that's all the time I have. But before I go, here's that nice fellow with some more interesting information. Well, honey, and all you boys and girls, I've got to go now.
All right, Mr. Carnegie Man, but I'll be waiting for you next week.
Okay, that's a date, and a date with all you boys and girls. Be sure to meet me with our little friend, Miss Honey, next week when I read Puck the Comic Weekly. For I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. I'll be back to read the funnies to you happy boys and honey. Don't forget, boys and girls, see you all next week. Your friend, the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man.
Well, folks, that was the Comic Weekly Man, and wishing you a Merry Christmas. First comic, Flash Gordon, aired on December the 24th, 1950. And now it's time for our last Comic Weekly program. Yes, indeed. It's a question for you. It's called, Did You Have a Wonderful Christmas? And first comic, Flash Gordon. It was aired on December 31st, 1950. So my good friends, enjoy the last show, and I'll see you on the marathon on December the 17th, 2016.
I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man, and I'm here to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Yes, boys and girls, it's Comic Weekly time, and here I come right into your house to bring a little fun and happiness. Right out of the pages of Puck the Comic Weekly, straight into your living room, your friend the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Little Miss Honey, did you have a wonderful Christmas?
Oh, yes. It was the most wonderful Christmas I ever had. I got a new doll, and I got a doll's house, and I got 6 dresses for the doll, and 3 dresses for myself, and 6 pairs of shoes for the doll, and 3 pairs of shoes for myself, and a hat for myself, and a hat for the doll, and a machine gun.
For yourself or for the doll?
For me, of course.
Oh, excuse me. And did you make good resolutions for the new year?
You mean like trying to be good and kind and honest and loyal like Prince Valiant?
Yes.
Yes. I did.
Well, that'll make a very happy new year for me. And just for that, I'll read you Puck the Comic Weekly. But before I do, let's listen to this nice man. Now, here we go with Puck the Comic Weekly.
And please, could we go over to Flash Gordon right away? Because Flash and Dale are on a strange planet with a very beautiful queen. Her name is Suni.
And as the three of them were riding to the palace with Goro, captain of the Queen's Guard, they were attacked by a huge monster.
And the wizard won't let them have guns or anything made of metal, so they have no weapons to defend themselves. And I'm anxious to find out whether Flash or Dale gets hurt.
Well, let's turn over to page 2. And here we go with Flash Gordon.
Magic words for the music, please.
Very well, my lady. Riga riga doon doon, saskamatash. Let's have music for Heroic Flash. Huge dragon sweeps Captain Goro and his mount to the ground. Flash snatches up Goro's broken lance and tries to distract the monster from Goro. As the monster turns to Flash, Goro escapes last picture top row, seizing a sudden chance. Flash darts in close and catches the dragon at its only vulnerable point, the monster's evil eye and tiny brain, and the monster slowly sinks to the ground, dying. First picture, bottom row. Captain Goro says gratefully,
"Thank you for saving my queen's life and my own."
Flash warns,
"We're not saved yet. Those birds don't look friendly."
They see coming toward them a flock of huge three-headed birds, birds big enough to kill a man. Queen Suni looks at them in horror. She tells Flash they're Hydra vultures and says they'd better take cover in the dragon's cave. But Goro protests,
"No, no. It's against the wizard's metal laws. We can't go underground, even into a cave."
Flash orders last picture. "Your duty is to your queen, not the wizards, you idiot. Get into the cave. It's the only place where we have a fighting chance against these birds." As Dale, Suni, and Goro run for the inside of the cave, Flash beats off the first of the three-headed vultures who tries to kill him.
Creature, why 20 more try to kill him.
Yes.
Dale and the others will be safe, all right, but what's going to happen to Flash? He's all alone fighting the vulture.
Well, next week we'll find out whether they're all safe.
All right. Now can we go across the page to Dick's adventures? Because Dick is dreaming he's in the early days of America when George Washington lived.
And there's trouble between the English and the Americans. And the Declaration of Independence has just been written.
And that's when the Americans told the British that they were going to be free and they were going to rule themselves.
That's right. And Dick is now on his way with the Declaration of Independence to George Washington. And here we go to find out what happens next with Dick's adventures. Say the magic words with me.
Riggity-pack-a-zack-a-zick.
Let's have music for Adventurous Dick. It's a rainy summer day in 1776. Dick finds himself on a tired horse jogging down a muddy, troop-clogged street called Broadway. At length, he sees what he's been looking for. Washington's headquarters in New York. Dick dismounts and goes into the building. In his hand, Dick has the first copy of the Declaration of Independence just accepted by the Continental Congress in Philadelphia. As yet, no one in New York has seen it. Last picture, top row, Dick gives it to Washington, who instantly orders it read to all his officers and men. First picture, next row, the Declaration of Independence is read to Washington's army. It's a solemn moment. Dick studies the faces of the first American soldiers, farmer boys, frontiersmen, merchants, clerks, artisans. Many of them have never held a rifle. And it's read to the officers. Washington is a Virginia planter. General Israel Putnam is an innkeeper. General Knox, a bookseller, and General Nathaniel Green, a blacksmith. Dick glows with admiration for their fantastic courage and daring to defy the staggering power of England. Meanwhile, last picture of the row, from reports of trappers and Indians friendly to the American cause, it's known to Washington that a vast force of British regulars and Hessian mercenaries is being massed in Halifax, Nova Scotia, under General Howe for the attack on New York. And we see the ships of the British and the soldiers preparing for the attack. Hourly, the enemy is expected. Dick on watch duty, first picture bottom row on Long Island, sights a long line of sails far out at sea, and he cries out,
"The British transports! You can see them coming!"
As Dick and Washington's officers watch, the British ships, loaded with soldiers, come closer and closer. With no navy to oppose them, the ships stream arrogantly into New York Bay, and Dick wonders what General Washington's little army can do now.
Because if there are no Americans there to stop them, the soldiers can come right up on the shore and fight the Americans.
Yes, it's a dangerous moment.
What's going to happen?
Well, that's something I don't want to spoil by telling you now. Next week, we'll find out.
Oh, I can hardly wait.
Well, let's make the waiting easier by reading Rusty Riley right now.
Oh, yes, because a very strange thing has happened. Do you remember Rusty heard one of the smugglers talking about black light?
Yes, last week we found out that a black light is something that's invisible, except when it shines in a certain chemical. Then the chemical will light up like an electric sign.
And Rusty had painted a name on his boat with some paint that he found in Squire Boggs' boathouse.
And then he said he needed a light. And Patty found something that looked like a lantern. When they turned it on, they found it was black light.
And the letters painted on that boat all lit up. So now let's find out more about that.
Very well. Here we go with Rusty Riley. Gallop and run till the road is dusty. Give us music for his horse and Rusty. Patty and Rusty stare at the letters that shine brightly on the boat. Rusty exclaims,
"Well, according to that article in the magazine, that means the paint I used for the name has that special chemical in it. There's something queer about this. Those men on that boat talking about black light and then finding one of these gadgets in our boathouse."
So immediately they go in to tell Tex. Meanwhile, at the barn, Mr. Kilgore, the treasury agent, is talking to Tex, too. Just as Kilgore's about to leave, Rusty comes in, last picture top row. He says,
"Gee willikins, Tex, we found one of those black light gadgets and the special paint they use with it in our boathouse."
Tex exclaims,
"Suffering horned toads. You mean it?"
Rusty goes on, first picture bottom row.
"I wouldn't have known what it was if you hadn't given me that magazine article. We painted a name on the skiff. And when you aim that gadget at it, it shines real bright."
Mr. Kilgore listens intently and says, "Wait a minute, Rusty. Take it slow. This is something I want to know all about." A little later, after hearing Rusty's story, Tex finally says,
"Hey, it's getting real late. Time for you youngsters to turn in. Scram now."
Rusty replies,
"Well, I'll go in a couple of minutes, Tex, but I gotta go back to the boathouse. I left my knife and my flashlight."
As Patty goes to the house, Rusty heads toward the boathouse. As he nears it, he stops, listens, and then says,
"Gee willikins, I believe I heard voices down there."
At last picture, we see Captain Kloon beside a boat in front of the boathouse. He seems to be waiting for something. And then he calls,
"Hurry up, Boggs. Get that black light projector. I got the boat ready."
From inside the boathouse, Squire Boggs, at whose place Rusty and the rest are staying, calls back,
"I'm trying to find it, Kloon, but somebody must have moved it. It's not where I left it."
Oh, we were right. That Squire Fire Boggs, he's just as bad as the smugglers.
I believe so. He wouldn't be fiddling around with a black light like the smugglers did if he weren't.
Oh, I hope they don't see Rusty there, though, and catch him.
I hope not, too.
Hey, this is really becoming something, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, now I think it's time for...
Donald Duck.
Very well, if you're so anxious, let's turn over the page. And there on page 5 is Donald Duck. Say the magic words with me. Squeegeum, squeegeum, squiddly chick-a-chack. Let's have music to fit a quack, quack. Well, Donald comes out on the porch with an angry look on his face. He yells to one of his nephews.
Louie, hey, just a minute. Come in, you young man.
And he leads Louie into the boy's room, which is a mess, toys scattered all around. And he says,
pick up your toys. This place is a shambles.
Louie takes one look at the floor and says,
oh, they must be Hueys and Deweys. Me, I'm neat.
And he trots out to play. Last picture, top row. Donald sticks his head out of the window and yells,
Huey, come in here.
First picture, bottom row. Donald has Huey in the boy's room. He points to all the trash on the floor and says,
Huey, get busy. Put your toys away. This room's a disgrace.
Huey replies,
hey, you got the wrong guy. I always keep my stuff tidy. Louie and Dewey are the guys you want.
And he trots back to play. Next picture, Donald sticks his head out the back door and yells,
Dewey, come on!
Next picture, he's showing Dewey the room covered with messy toys. And Dewey smiles cheerfully and says,
yuck, yunk, it must be Huey's and Louie's. I'm awful neat.
And trots out to play. Donald gets so angry he begins to steam. He gets hotter and hotter. And he's so angry he's about to bust. And then... And a little later, last picture, Donald is in the house reading his newspaper, while his three nephews, last picture, stand at the window looking as though their hearts will break as they stare unhappily at all their toys, which are out in the backyard in the ash can. Well, what do you think of that?
Well, I think it was very mean of Donald to throw all those beautiful toys away.
Well, I'm sure that Donald wouldn't have thrown the toys away if the boys loved their toys enough to pick them up and take care of them.
Yes, but...
Not a single one of the boys was willing to pick those toys up.
Yes, I know, but...
Yes, but what?
I guess you're right. The boys should have picked up their toys.
Yes, and if they promise Donald they'll take care of them again, maybe Donald will let them bring the toys back before the junkman hauls them away. And now, here's something special.
Oh, tell me quick.
Well, I've got a wonderful big surprise for you.
A surprise? Oh, I love surprises. I just love surprises. What is it?
Well, if you just hang on to yourself for just a moment, you'll know what it is. But first, here's that man again with something interesting to say. Now, here we go again with Puck the Comic Weekly. But wait, before I read any more, I have a surprise for everyone.
Oh, goody, goody. I love surprises. Tell me what it is.
Well, starting next week, the next issue of Puck the Comic Weekly is going to have a new comic star.
Oh, that's wonderful. Tell me quick, who's it going to be?
A favorite of yours, little Miss Honey, and a favorite of all you boys and girls.
Hello, Mr. Comic Weekly man. Hi, Miss Honey.
Well, here he is in person, Hopalong Cassidy. Hoppy, it's nice to have you with us. I was just telling Miss Honey that we'll be able to follow your new adventures in Puck the Comic Weekly soon. How about giving us a preview?
Yeah, that's right. I'm proud to have Hopalong join the many great stars in Puck, and I hope my friends will enjoy our adventures. My pals California and Lucky, of course, and my great horse Topper will be with me. We tangle with some pretty tough characters. Right now, we're trying to bring to justice a bunch of scoundrels led by, of all things, a beautiful girl named Calico. Quite a story, and I think you'll like it.
I'm sure we will.
And I know we will. Tell me, Mr. Cassidy, are children of other countries fans of yours, too?
Yeah, a great deal of mail comes to me from my little friends in countries all over the world. I receive many nice letters from Australia, England, Ireland, Africa, Japan, South America, and, well, just about everywhere. I'm proud of these faraway friends, and I hope that sometime soon I might visit their lands and meet them personally.
Yes, I'm sure that would be as big a thrill for them as for the children here in America.
Say, you certainly deserve a lot of credit, Hoppy, for the time you spend making personal appearances to make all these children so happy. I imagine all the traveling's a pretty tiring job.
Well, we do travel around a lot and keep pretty busy, but it's certainly not tiring. As a matter of fact, the more I do, the better I feel. You see, just about everything I do is connected with kids. And they're so full of pep and enthusiasm, I can't help but feel the same way. Since I have so much fun doing it, it never seems like work at all.
Yes, I know just what you mean. Well, Hoppy, you can certainly expect Miss Honey here next Sunday when we start your adventures in Puck the Comic Weekly.
Oh, yes. I can hardly wait.
Well, that's just fine, and I hope that goes for all you boys and girls who are listening, because I've got some exciting adventures coming up, and I wouldn't want you to miss any of them.
And especially next week.
Well, I hope no one misses next week. I know I'll be here when you read my adventures for the first time. Say, I gotta be leaving now, Mr. Comic Weekly Man and Miss Honey, but I'll be back in person next week. So long till then.
So long, Hoppy.
So long.
See you next week.
Gee, Hopalong Cassidy in person. And he'll be back next week.
Well, this is certainly quite an event. Say, do you think you can recover from all this excitement? You know, we still have some funnies to read. Now would you like to see what Roy Rogers is doing?
Oh, yes, please. Because last week, Roy jumped in the river to save a boy who was caught in the wild water.
And up on top of the bluff above the river, an old pioneer character wearing a fur cap was shooting at Roy.
And just at the moment when it looked like the old man was going to shoot Roy and the boy dead, another man rode up and stopped him from shooting, and I would like to find out who this man is.
Very well. Turn to the last page of the first section of Puck the Comic Weekly. And here we go with Roy Rogers, King of the Cowboys. Hi-yip-hi-yo. Now here we go with Roy and Trigger. Hi-yip-hi-yo. The mysterious stranger who stopped the old man from shooting exclaims,
"What's the idea of shooting at my son, Furhead?"
Furhead replies,
"Knuckles Hardy. Oh, honest, Mr. Hardy, I didn't know he was here, boy."
"Well, you know it now. That's his pony, Clover, there."
"Yeah, but the lad was snooping around the old fort, and I was only looking out for your interests."
Last picture, top row, Hardy looks in the river. He sees that Roy is saving his son, and he exclaims,
"Well, the young scamp's safe out of the river. And a good thing for you that he is, Furhead."
First picture next row, Roy helps the boy out of the river, saying,
"Hey, come on, sonny. I got a score to settle with that hombre who's been shooting at us from above."
The boy replies,
"And I want to get even with him, too. He chased me out of Fort Havoc."
Roy and the boy see that Furhead and the man who had stopped the shooting have disappeared. So they start back to where they left their horses. Roy asks, "Where do you live, sonny?" The boy replies,
"At the Box H. My dad owns the biggest spread in these parts."
As they come up on the top of the plateau, last picture of the row, Roy exclaims, "Hey, he's gone. Well, I aim to find out what's going on at old Fort Havoc that invites bullets for trespassing." The boy says, "Well, you're not going without me." Meanwhile, first picture bottom row, Hardy and Furhead are riding at a dead gallop. Hardy says,
"Move along, Furhead. I want to find out when Nitro Kane will be ready to do the job I hired him for."
Furhead replies,
"Well, he ain't the hurrying kind. You can't be when you're handling explosives."
They gallop into the port. Last picture, Hardy calls out,
"Nitro! Nitro Kane, where are you? What the..."
As the horses rear up at the explosion at their feet, a voice within the fort calls out,
"Greetings, Mr. Knuckles Hardy."
Oh, this is very strange. The man who saved Roy and the boy from being shot is the boy's father, isn't he?
Yes.
And yet, now he's with Furhead, the man who's doing the shooting, just as like as if he's a partner with him in something.
And I suspect that this partnership isn't a very good one.
And the man's son is with Roy Rogers, and Roy is going to investigate.
Yes, it looks like the boy and Roy will be against the boy's father.
Oh, this is really very unusual.
Mm-hmm. Next week, we'll find out more about it. But now...
Oh, now, of course, it's time for Dagwood and Blondie.
Of course it is. And, of course, here they are on the first page of the second section of Puck the Comic Weekly.
And, of course, you're going to read that now.
Of course. So here we go with Dagwood and Blondie. Ramafoo, Ramafum, Zim, Zem, Zombie. Conjure music for Dagwood and Blondie. Dagwood's neighbor, Herb Woodley, has stopped in to ask Dagwood a favor. He tells Dagwood,
I've got a package come and collect, and I have to go out, Dagwood.
So Dagwood tells Herb to leave a note at his house to have the package delivered at the Bumsteads. Herb tells Dagwood he doesn't remember exactly how much he's supposed to pay for it. So Dagwood says,
well, just sign one of your checks and leave it with me.
So Herb signs the check, last picture top row, saying,
oh, yes, yeah, good idea. Here it is, Dagwood. Now you just fill in the proper amount when the delivery man arrives.
First picture next row, Herb walks off, saying,
oh, it's wonderful to have a friend so honest you can trust him with one of your signed checks.
But Dagwood puts the check beside the phone, then goes to take a nap. Last picture of the row, the doorbell rings. And Cookie, Dagwood's daughter, and a little neighbor girl answer the door. They find a beggar dressed in ragged clothes who asks,
Could you spare a poor old man a dime?
Cookie exclaims,
but my daddy's taking a nap.
First picture next row, the neighbor girl picks up the check with Herb Woodley's signature on it and says, well, if you don't want to wake your daddy, why don't you just give the poor old man this check? So Cookie replies,
I'll write $1 million on it, and that'll make him rich.
Now, this means that if Cookie writes $1 million on it, that because Herb Woodley's signature is already on the check, the bank will think that Herb Woodley has written the check and wants the bank to give the hobo $1 million, which is very unusual. Next picture, the hobo's at the bank, where he hands the check to the bank clerk. The clerk looks at it and exclaims,
$1 million?
The hobo replies,
yep, and give it to me in $1 bills.
There's a... And the clerk has gone to the office of the president of the bank. The clerk and the president and all of them are jabbering wildly. As the president looks at the check, he exclaims,
$1 million!
And the clerk exclaims,
and that's Herb Woodley's signature, all right.
And the vice president exclaims,
why, he's never had over $200 in his account.
That means that Herb is in trouble for writing a check for $1 million when he doesn't have more than $200 in the bank. First picture, bottom row, the doorbell at the Bumstead house rings, awakening Dagwood. Dagwood exclaims,
oh, that's probably the delivery boy. But why is he ringing the doorbell so violently?
So Dagwood opens the door. And five policemen grab Dagwood. And without asking him any questions, take him down to jail. And last picture, Dagwood finds himself locked in jail with a hobo and Herb. Dagwood asks innocently,
why are we here, Herb?
Herb just looks at Dagwood and growls like a dog.
Poor Dagwood, he looks scared.
He certainly does, and no wonder, being jerked out of his house and being taken to jail without knowing why.
Won't he be angry with Cookie when he learns what she did?
Oh, I'm afraid she's going to be in trouble tonight. Yeah. Well, now it's time for Prince Valiant.
Oh, that's really exciting, because Prince Valiant is staying at a castle, and the castle is being attacked, and last week you said that the most feared thing was happening, and I want to find out what it is.
Well, let's go over to the last page, and we'll find out right now with Prince Valiant in the days of King Arthur. Hecate, Breakate, Grey Malkin, and Quince, music romantic for a fair, fair prince. Black Robert, who's attacking the castle of Sir Ree Fook, has put his men to work building a tower that will rise above the walls of the castle. From the tower, he expects to be able to shoot down the soldiers within the castle and thus win the battle. But in order to prevent this, Sir Ree builds the wall of the castle higher, so Black Robert can't shoot into the castle. But last picture top row, Sir Ree is telling Prince Valiant that Black Robert has unlimited material with which to build, while Sir Ree only has the supply within the castle. Then Prince Valiant remembers that the tower that Black Robert is building is without solid foundation, and he suggests that they dig a tunnel from within the castle, underneath the tower, and set the tower on fire. And so this work is done. For weeks the work continues, until in the big picture in the middle of the page, we see that the tunnel runs directly underneath the corner of Black Robert's tower.
Then this place is packed with wood and charcoal and set ablaze. First picture, bottom row, the smithy within the castle and the armory are stripped of their bellows, and the men force air into the tunnel like blacksmiths so that the fire will burn. All night they pump until the very ground under their feet glows with the great heat from the chamber. And then the supporting timbers burn through when the tower thunders down. Last picture, Black Robert stands very still as the labor of weeks crumbles to ruins. Then he turns to his task again, for this resolute man will never give up. Indeed it was. And now maybe it'll be safe within the castle until the messenger has a chance to bring back help.
Oh, I certainly hope so. We'll find out next week, won't we?
I hope so. Now, that's all the time I have. But before I go, here's that fellow with some more interesting information. Well, honey, and all you boys and girls, I gotta go now.
All right, Mr. Comic Vicky Man, but I'll be waiting for you next week.
Okay, that's a date. And remember that next week, Hopalong Cassidy will be here in person to help us start his adventures in Puck the Comic Weekly. Yes, sir, next week and every week thereafter, Hopalong Cassidy appears in Puck the Comic Weekly. Meet us all next week. Oh, I'm the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man. I'll be back to read the funnies to you happy boys and honeys. Don't forget, boys and girls, see you all next week. Your friend, the Comic Weekly Man, the jolly Comic Weekly Man.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was The Comic Weekly Man, and did you have a wonderful Christmas? First comic, Flash Gordon, and it was aired December the 31st, 1950. I hope you all enjoyed the hour and a half of The Comic Weekly Man programs. It's kind of fun hearing sound effects to comic books. Well, I've got to go now, my good friends, but it was very good to be on the air. I want to thank everyone for listening, and I want you all to realize that there's something coming up. Yep, it's a very serious, dire matter, folks, and it's going to bore you to tears if I talk about it. It's the marathon! Yes, the December 17th marathon! And it's not boring. I just thought I'd say something to make sure you're awake and listening, because we need anyone and everyone to tune in. Yep. The Christmas Marathon for Saturday, December the 17th, 2016 is on its way, and we're going to have a good time playing a bunch of shows. So there's a bunch of good hosts, and there's, you know, prizes and camaraderie. So come on out, and we'll be happy to see you. Peace out, my good friends, and we'll talk to you soon.